Okay. Hi, good morning, everyone. Just reintroducing Daniel Friedman, who's an engineering physicist, the CEO, McDonald, Detweiler & Associates, and author of three Torah and Science books. And he is going to continue to talk about that theme on reconciling Genesis and science on the appearance of humans. Daniel Friedman.
So I should have been paying more attention, but who wasn't here in the last hour? Just a couple of people? Okay. Well, then I'll reward those that were here with a joke at the beginning if we got a few extra minutes. So this nice Jewish boy goes to his mother and he says to her, you know, Mom, where do we come from? And she says, well, you know, God created the universe and then he created Adam. And then a bunch of people came by, and then there was Abraham and Moses and Grandpa, and here we are. And the next day he goes to his dad and says, Dad, where do we come from? He says, well, you know, there was some kind of a big bang, and stuff happened, and it took a lot of years, and some microscopic stuff came, and then there was fish and animals and monkeys, and then Grandpa, and here we are. So he goes back to the mother and says, Mom, this is what you told me, this is what Dad told me, you know, who's right? He says, oh, it's easy. Dad was talking about his side of the family, and I'm talking about my side of the family. So let's hope we both have the same side. But so we're going to talk about humans. And let me take 1 minute for the two people that have joined us to just recap two things that we're going to need in this lecture from the last lecture. And in the last lecture, I argued that a creation day was 2.5 billion years, and that in Genesis, everything is done through nature. So that's why the theories that science has developed are so successful, because God made it that way. So we're going to need those 2 points. So we're moving to the heart of the creation evolution debate, because, you know, while people are arguing about rocks and about evolution, they weren't too excited. But when somebody told somebody else that his predecessor was a monkey, things got really heated up. And that's when the real argument started. So the question is it the theory of evolution, where we have some kind of a animal-like ancestor, or is it the theory of devolution? You've probably never heard that, I just invented it, but the Torah basically says that there's God, and then there's Adam, and Adam is not us. Adam is a really special being, right? First he was male and female, before he got split into two, and if you look in our sources, it describes Adam as having incredible powers to see across the universe, physically was larger, and so on. So there's God, there's this other huge divine being at the beginning, and then there's eventually ourselves. So we are devolving from something higher to something more physical and lower, keeping our soul, versus evolving from an amoeba on up. So that's the big argument that's out there. So like the last time, we have a theory problem, because the theory of evolution is pretty good, and we also have a timeline problem. So on this side I have Genesis, it's pretty straightforward. Adam was at day 6, so basically it's 5777 plus a few hours, and then there was the flood and Babel and so on. I'll go over that in a minute. Let me talk about the science timeline. In the science side, you will see in a minute that there were a lot of things that look more like humans than monkeys for millions of years. But if you want to take a bunch of bones to the doctor and compare them to my bunch of bones for an anatomy exam, that doesn't happen until 200,000 years ago. So 200,000 years ago, there are skeletons, complete skeletons, discovered in Israel, by the way, complete skeletons of humans that if you took them to the doctor and you took a cadaver to the doctor, I guess, from today, he would say they're identical. That in science is known as anatomically modern humans. And pardon the language, but I'm using the language of science, Science believed there were humans before this. They just weren't anatomically modern. And you'll have to decide whether there were humans before this or not. I'm going to argue there weren't. There were animals. But the interesting thing is that we believe those, in science, we believe those humans were not behaving like we behave today. And they only started behaving like we behave today about 100,000 years later. So for 100,000 years or so, they run around behaving different. I'm going to define all of these things later. I just want to frame the problem. At some point, we believe about 100,000 years ago that they started behaving the way we behave today. And there's a specific definition for that. And I'll have to wait to give it to you because it's not what you think. So people, you know, you talk to kids, they say, well, human means that we take good care of kids, which is good for us as parents. I guess that's what kids think. But that's not a human behavior. There's lots of animals that do that really well. Human behaviors are things like painting. Not too many animals painting. So the important thing is that there's first these things that are anatomically like us and then later behavior like us. So they're called, you know, behaviorally modern humans. Okay? That's about 100,000 years ago. And then in science, we kind of figured out there was clothing certainly by 40,000 years ago, maybe earlier, but certainly by 40,000 years ago, we have needles made out of bone that indicate there was clothing. As we read yesterday, the flood at the simple reading says that all of humanity was destroyed. There's absolutely no evidence in that for science, and believe me, the Christian fundamentalists have been looking for this for a long time with the world-renowned scientists. There's no worldwide evidence for a flood, and we have our story. And then there's a whole history of language in the world, and it correlates in some ways with the story of Babel, but in other ways it does not. And of course, the whole migration science has plotted out the whole migration of humans through the world. They've determined through DNA analysis that there were humans only in Africa for the first 120, 30,000 years, and then all of a sudden, overnight, they went from Africa to every corner of the planet. They got to Australia, they got to South America, Northern Europe, minus 30 degrees, they went everywhere. And it happened very quickly. We have that explanation in the Babel story. It doesn't coincide in time at all with the scientific thing that says that we just got out of Africa one day and went everywhere. This is really being worked out recently through genetics from DNA, because there are millions of people that participate in the DNA project, so they can track who came from who to what continent and so on and so forth. So we have a big timeline discrepancy, just like in the last lecture, hundreds of thousands of years. Of course, you've already seen some of the approach to that. And we have a big theory. We, in the Torah, we devolve from God to Adam to humans, and in science, it's the other way around, from the bottom up. So unlike the last lecture, I'm going to start with how, and then talk about time later, because you already kind of sort of know the story on time. But the big issue here is how. That's the big argument that's out there. So like last time, I'm going to show you the science side, because your kids are getting this in colorful plates in their science books. My niece shows up with these pictures of all these bones, and it's taught, the human evolution is taught in the public curriculum, which most of our Jewish schools use, as a complete fact. There's just no doubt. It's full of pictures. I'll show you some of the pictures if you're not aware of what your kids have in their books. So how does science come to all these dates? And like last time I explained, the dates are for real. The theories are complete out of the story. You know, there's no way to tell what happened 200,000 years ago. And nobody can reproduce it in the lab. They can't evolve a monkey into a human in the lab. But the dates are for real. We have those dates correlated from many different angles. So those dates are established by looking at the fossil record. And as I explained last time, and certainly true in the case of humans, we're not just talking bones now. With humans, we have tools. We have needles. We have cave paintings. We have bits of money, we think, We even have temples from 10,000 years ago where there was worshiping going on. So we have a lot of tools. And then, of course, we have genetics, because the DNA can last 50,000 years and more under the right conditions. So we are able to get the DNA of people that were roaming around Europe 50,000 years ago compared to our DNA, compared to the DNA of monkeys. Of course, we can compare all our DNAs around all the continents to see how different, say, a Chinese is from us, and then compare that to somebody from 50,000 years ago and get a feeling for either, are we all the same as 50,000 years ago or not. That's all new in the last 10 years or so, all this analysis, since I think the human DNA was sequenced in 2003, I think, and then the chimpanzees a couple of years later. And we even have Neanderthal, which is a previous species of things that might have been human DNA, because they lasted till 30,000 years ago. So one of these species is in the DNA range of preservation. So we sequenced their DNA, and we found their DNA in our DNA now. So there was obviously some interbreeding. So there's a lot of knowledge from the fossil record. I can't overemphasize how much you can get out of this. And as I mentioned earlier, they can track the DNA all the way through all the continents to see who went where and where they are today. So scientists take all this. There's no evolution in here. We're just looking at things that are buried in the ground. Okay, no theory. And then just put them on a timeline. And I just stole this picture from somewhere that I'll show you. So the so-called human timeline, I hate to say this in a synagogue, it's not human. So sorry it's in the slide, but that's what science calls it. There's no proof that these things were human. What they mean is that they look more like us than a monkey. So if you take one of these skeletons and dress it up in the computer as a real face, which they do, they can do that, and you put it in front of us and say, yeah, that looks more human than a monkey, but that's the definition of human. It looks more human than a monkey. And we'll talk about the real definition of human in a minute. So there were things 3.9 million years ago, 4 million years ago, that looked more like a human than a monkey. And then they kind of went, and this is a mess. And that's the truth. So the picture that you see on Windows where there's a hunched over monkey and it starts to straighten himself out over a period of pictures and you get a human, have you seen that picture? Everywhere. It's completely false. That's the picture. This was not a linear path. There are 17 species so far of these things. All of these things, like Homo erectus. Neanderthals are there somewhere. There are 17 separate species, meaning that they believe they didn't interbreed. That's the definition of a species. You don't breed. If you don't breed, then it's a separate species. They're all extinct. Every single one is extinct. There's just the chimps and us left. In between. Chimps are 30 million years ago, chimpanzees, so this only starts 4.5 million years ago. There's a bunch of monkeys before that are also extinct. So we have all of these things, and they don't follow the Darwin progression. They don't get bigger brained and taller and smarter. Some of them get smaller, some of them get bigger brains, and then they get smaller brains again. It's not a linear, it's quite a chaotic thing, and we still don't have a straight line to us. There's still all kinds of these dead ends. So there's of course, science thinks it just has to uncover more bones and then the puzzle will fill itself out and it'll be perfect. But with the bones we've uncovered, there's a lot of blank spaces in the puzzle and we can't quite put the puzzle together. But the pictures of these things are in all the science books. And the story is, you know, start here at the chimp and move through a common ancestor to, not at the chimp, but just before, a common ancestor to chimps and humans, and then move through right to 200,000 years ago. So that's what's being told. But these bones are real. We got to deal with the bones. They're there. And the DNA is real on the ones we have DNA. And we have tools from them because we find the bones together with certain artifacts in the same cave. So we know that those were being used by those and these other ones were being used by other ones. And we can put all that together. So that's what we know anatomically. Then people study, you know, what were these people doing? And you might say, you know, how on earth can you figure that out from the fossil record? Well, I told you we have tools and cave paintings, and we have other things which are really fascinating. For example, there's a lot of tracks that have been discovered in Africa where there was a flood and people died instantly in the flood, and their footsteps were fossilized. And there's footsteps of big feet and small feet walking side by side, presumably a mother and a child. And sometimes they're far enough apart that you could walk without holding hands. But at some point in history, they're at a point where you cannot walk without holding hands. The footsteps are too close. So you couldn't really walk without unless you were holding the person's hand that closely. So we know that at some point, humans started holding hands, which, you know, tells us something about the behavior. So these are the kinds of things people, it's not perfect. It's not like physics, like the previous stuff. That physics is perfect. A little biased. But it gives you some idea what happened. So based on that, and based on a lot of other work, the most famous person I'm sure you all know is Jane Goodall, spent 3 years looking at monkeys trying to figure out what's the difference between a monkey and a human. And it's that complicated that it took 3 years. So if you've ever been to a hockey game, you can see why. But whoops, wrong button. Sorry about that. So what science has done by looking at all of these artifacts and looking at the difference between monkeys and humans and other apes and so on, is they come up with a set of behaviors, like I said, that are called modern human behaviors. And like I said, it's not what you think. One of them, by the way, is speech, which goes unsaid here. We're the only things that speak. And by speech, we don't mean communication like whales and monkeys. We mean a lecture that I'm giving now, not three words like give me a banana or I'm cold or danger. We're talking about really putting stuff together. Abstract thinking, that's a clear human behavior, the ability to do math, the ability to use symbols when talking about things. Planning. Is a human behavior, the ability to plan for the future, the ability to use knowledge of the past to decide what to do in the future. You don't see that in animals. So when a monkey crosses the street, he tells the little monkey, don't cross right now. We tell our kids, next time you come here, look both ways. If there's no cars, cross. That's planning at some level. Even at that level, you don't see that in animals. But they take fantastic care of their kids, right? In that sense. So they're spelled out on the internet. It's about 10 or 15. This is translated into things like we can paint, we can do math, we can put together a project plan to build a temple or something. They're translated into things that we would do every day. I just give you the high level here because the details would fill the slide too much. And like I said, we run around for 100,000 years without exhibiting this. It's one of the big mysteries on the human evolution side. And then all of a sudden, we exhibit this. There's different opinions at whether this is sudden or it takes time. And that hasn't been decided by science, whether all of these things happen very quickly or it happened over a period of a few tens of thousands of years. Are we clear on the science before I move to Torah? We have a bunch of bones. We have a bunch of things that started 4 million years ago. 200,000 years ago, the doctor would say we're identical. About 60,000 years ago, the psychiatrist would say we're identical. And kind of here we are today. And then science, of course, is trying to explain that through an evolutionary process. Not successfully yet, but they're trying to. So let's move to Torah. Okay? So in the Torah, it's really clear from without going to any fancy sources, just looking at Genesis, it's in chapter 2, God tells us that he made Adam's body first, and then he breathed the soul into him. And although I said in the last lecture that this is one of those baras, in chapter 1 it said that God created man, but in chapter 2 it backs off and says he made from something, dust in this case, he made the body. So all the sources say, well, the creation related not to the body, related to the soul. So on the body side, I've given you the two quotes for the beast of the field and the human, and you can see that they're not dissimilar. Of course, the commentaries go at great length to explain what the differences are, but there's not a difference. The difference is relates to our personality and our character traits. They don't relate to how it was made. So the Torah is telling us that the body for a human being was made the same way as the body for animals. So don't be surprised that when you study anatomy of monkeys and cows and humans, you're going to find lots of similarities. It's the same process that was used. And as we talked before, it's been done within the laws of science. Further than that, and I love this, but in the Kabbalah, it says that the universe consists of several levels. There's the inanimate, the plants, the animals, the human, and God. Those are the main levels. And it says that between every level, there's an intermediary. There's something that contains pieces of both levels. For example, between us and God, the intermediary is our soul. Our soul, if it was free, it'd be like God, but it's tied up in our body. So it's kind of in between us and God. And believe it or not, several hundred years before Darwin or anybody in science even thought to propose this, it's in our Jewish literature by none other than the Arizal, that the intermediary between a human and an animal, a beast of the field, a four-legged thing, there is an intermediary, and that is the kuf, which is normally translated as ape or monkey. So I don't know if Darwin figured it out from our literature or what he did, but we have sources that are telling us that our body was made the same as animals or similar to animals, and it was a progression, as we discussed last time. There was microscopic life, life in the water, life in the land, the Arizal saying apes and a body. So far, in terms of what we observe, there's no difference. There's a timeline problem, but there's no difference. And I'll have more Torah sources in the next slide, but let me just get the body and the soul out, and then we'll go into more depth on each one. Now, what about the soul? So this is the bara. It's breathed into. I explained last time that when we said God spoke, he took something infinite and he contracted it, like I'm contracting an infinite thought into words. The Kabbalah for breathing is like blowing the shofar. There's no contraction. You're just blowing your guts out. It's just raw. So when God breathes the soul into us, he's not contracting into finite things. He's breathing his infinity right into us. So we believe we have an infinite soul, which is a part of God. So that's the source right there. And we became a living being, and that is also translated as a speaking being. We're called speaking beings in the Torah in many places. So we are told that speech came in with that. We're also told that we're made in God's image. And Rashi and Ramban translate that differently. One says it's free will, and the other one says it's God's creative process. So to be in God's image means that we have the same ability to create as God. Obviously not miracles, but we have the same creative process of imagining things and making things within our physical realm. So those are the things that come with the soul: speech, free will, creative process. We'll have more details in the next slide. I call this a software upgrade. So we're kind of running around like animals. We're eating, everything's going just fine, and then we get a download, a software upgrade. We can now speak, and we can be creative and plan and so on and so forth. The hardware is pretty straightforward. It's like an animal. Okay, I'm now going to move to other sources from the Midrash and the Kabbalah to go in a little bit deeper into this. Whoa, this thing is awfully sensitive. Can only do two at a time. There we go. So in the Midrash Rabbah, we heard a lot about that in the first talk. It's said that God created man with attributes from the higher beings and attributes from the lower beings. And the higher beings are seen as angels, and the lower beings are seen as animals. So let's start with the lower beings. He eats, he drinks, He procreates, he excretes, he dies like an animal. And the higher beings, he stands upright, he speaks, he understands, and understanding there being, it's translated as basically studying Talmud, like teasing stuff out, being a lawyer, really figuring stuff out, not just understanding simple things. And he sees, which is translated as not seeing with the eyes, but envisioning the future, an ability to envision the future on it. So that's what we're told is man. That's from the Midrash Rabbah, it's right up there, Midrash Rabbah. Yeah. Okay? So that's a little more detail. There, I haven't counted it, but it's about 1,000 pages on man in our sources. I'm just giving you a tiny, tiny bit on it. It's decreation, right? That was the purpose. So it goes into a lot of detail about man. Now, if we go to the Kabbalah and to the Arizal, we get a ton of really cool stuff. First of all, it says, and this is not just the Kabbalah, but this is more general, Adam contained the soul of all humanity. He had one big soul, and it contained the soul of all humanity. And when he sinned, that soul broke into pieces. And the Kabbalistic work works out how many pieces. It's 613th times 613th and 600,000. That's not my numbers, not like I said. This is from the Arizal. When you multiply those numbers, you get 226 billion pieces. So when Adam sinned, his big soul broke into 226 billion pieces. And the concept in Kabbalah is that each of those pieces will be incarnated into a human being. So we've got 7 billion running around right now on Earth of the 226. And don't ask me, but I did calculate all this out to see how many pieces we're going to use up by the year 6000, and it works. So we're gonna get through all of these pieces. And we take our piece of soul, and we fix up that part of the sin. And eventually, all the pieces of Adam's soul are fixed, and we recreate a common fixed-up world, and that's Mashiach. That's when Mashiach comes. That's the process that we're going through in the world of Tikkun, fixing. But that's an aside. What I want to let you know is that Adam had a soul. We have a tiny piece of that soul. We're supposed to fix that particular problem. So when God breathed the soul, and I'm going to argue that, and I have argued that Adam doesn't look like us, but the piece that we get from Adam is a bit of his soul. And that soul came with that software upgrade we just discussed, and a few other things, right? Adam decided to clothe himself. Adam was commanded to go fill the world, to domesticate things and so on. So I'll recap those in a minute. And that's the piece that we get put into us in the conception process. And our religion thinks that comes from the original pieces of Adam. Okay, so what I've argued so far is our body is like animals. We should not be surprised that when we look at the physical characteristics, we come to the conclusions that science has come to, because it was designed that way. But our soul is very special, and you can see where I'm going. This software upgrade matches the modern human behaviors of science as we go through. Maybe we'll talk about that right now. When you write down from the Torah sources exactly what all those things mean, envisions the future and so on, and you write down, you look it up in science, what Jane Goodall wrote down, there's a really good match. Really, really good match. So those modern human behaviors that there's no explanation for in science, they appear suddenly, they're this bit of Adam that came through. And furthermore, Adam was commanded to fill the world, and all of a sudden, we went and filled the world. We went to every part of the world. In fact, the Midrash tells us that Adam, while Eve was chatting to the snake, I always wonder where on earth was Adam when Eve was chatting to the snake? He was touring the world with God to see where all his descendants would go. So he had already figured out where Mount Everest was in Toronto and all of these places. That's in the Midrash. But anyway, he's commanded to go everywhere. And of course, we still have that urge. At least I do. I have to climb every mountain I see for some strange reason I can't understand. And of course, Adam also felt the shame and wanted to clothe himself. So that's a taste of what we find in the Torah. And timeline aside, it fits with what we're seeing in science. We're seeing unexplainable modern human behaviors, and we're seeing very explainable bodies. Are we good so far? Okay. I'm going to apologize to the people from the previous time, but I'm not going to go into the whole timeline thing again, because I want to leave some 10 minutes for questions at the end. Now, you know, what about the timeline? What about these 200,000 years and so on and so forth? Well, we saw that a day was 2.5 billion years. We have sources that say that under pressure, a human being can make a moral decision in 9.6 seconds. I don't know if you believe that or not. I just read a scientific article that said it was about 10 seconds a couple of weeks ago on it. And I told you that there's a conversion, right? And just to add credibility to this, we have a lot of sources after the 6 days where it talks about a moment for God, like God was angry for a moment when he brought the flood, right? But it's 40 days. If you take 9.6 seconds, and I told you one day for God is 1,000 of our years, so you take 9.6 seconds for God, it works out to 40 days. Every time it says in the Torah, a God moment, we have to go through 40 days of trouble. And it works out exactly because the flood did not last for 40 days, it lasted for 40 and a half days. The same with Moses going up to the mountain twice. There's a night in there that's not counted. Part of the reason for the golden calf sin. So so when you multiply it out, you're not going to get 40, you're going to get 40 and a half, roughly. And it's an extra night in all of the stories. If you work out the chronology, I work it out in my book, The Chronology of the Flood to the Hour. So that's just to give you some comfort about the 9.6 seconds. When you convert the 9.6 seconds to the 6 days of creation, you get a couple hundred thousand, 300,000 years. And then God's creative process is described in Kabbalah to follow his four-letter name. So the Yud is the spark. You know, whenever we have an idea, we have no idea where it came from, right? You wake up in the middle of the night and you have an idea. The moment you have that idea, you immediately begin breaking it down in your head. That's the hay. The hay is always representing three dimensions, this way and the little one. It represents that you're spreading out an idea. So you're developing the idea. It's a mother principle. So the yud is the sperm. The hay is actually a pregnant woman with a baby inside, the little baby inside. It's the mother process of taking an idea and actually developing something useful. As you know, males, we just think of ideas, but women actually make them happen in general. So that's the concept of the hay. And then the vav is taking it from the spiritual or thought level to earth. So you develop the idea, then you take it down, bring it here, and then you do another hay. You build out the building. You build out the thing. So that's the creative process. It goes in these four steps. And we don't have time because I really do want to leave time for questions. But when you work through each of the steps and you work when the body was completed versus the soul and so on, the timeline does match. And I'll just put it up. Whoa. So somewhere in the hay, the first hay, in the yud hay, the first hay, the body appears, corresponding to when God is making the body, and then the soul. And it happens to be exactly 200,000. The timeline from science to 200,000 is approximate, but when you multiply the numbers in Genesis, it's exactly 200,000. It's just a coincidence. The body is complete. At 63,000, but it takes an hour. It takes one step. So at 63,000, the soul is fully, the software upgrade is fully downloaded. But it does take 60,000 to get there. So there's some behaviors before the 63. And science is approximately 60,000. We are very clear on what came with the soul. I just described it for you. And it's exactly these modern human behaviors. So science has no idea how we develop modern human behaviors. There's no theory. There's a theory that if you get more and more intelligent, but why does that lead to painting? You're supposed to be, and we're talking about people 60,000 years ago, they're supposed to be out hunting and surviving, right? Survival of the fittest. Why are they painting in the dark in some cave? and doing other things. So there's no good explanation for that. In the Torah, it's really clear. We got that software upgrade, and we went off to paint and to worship and to do a number of other things. As you saw last week, Adam is commanded to fill the earth. When you read the commentaries on that, it means fill the earth. Every corner of the planet is completely irrational. They were living in a nice, warm place. There were a ton of animals. And they ended up in Northern Europe at minus 20 hunting deer. Like, why not hang around the Middle East instead? Then they came down through Vancouver. I can see why they left there. It was too rainy. They got to California. They got to Mexico, and then went all the way into the southern tip of Chile. Like, it's really cold and rainy down there, worse than Vancouver. There's no explanation for why we went to all these places. It just doesn't make any sense. And they lost all kinds of people along the way. It was all done by little crafts, so they did little trips of 10 kilometers at a time in the ocean, and a lot of them died in the process. So that's what science has discovered. In the Torah, we're commanded, and so on. And of course, we're the only species that stands upright and speaks, which was one of the four things from the higher beings. There's no clear explanation for that in science. I know there's some theories that maybe Neanderthals spoke. That's still being contested and what speech means. In the Torah perspective, speech means the ability to do what we're doing now, not the ability to ask a few simple instructions. We're talking about studying Talmud, speaking and envisioning and arguing. So I hope I've shown you that there's a lot of agreement on the observable features of a body and a modern human behavior, whether you believe in souls or not. There's a body and a modern human behavior. They're both described the same way in science and Torah as to what they are. And of course, there's a real explanation in the Kabbalah of the resemblance to monkeys. They're the intermediate. The timeline I've shown you, and I haven't discussed the flood and Babel. That's in part two of this talk, but it does match up quite well. The language part does match up reasonably well. Not perfectly, but quite well. The real disagreement is that science thinks that there will be a theory to explain that these modern behaviors came about evolutionary, but just us getting smarter and smarter and smarter. And when we got smarter, we started doing math and we started painting and we started envisioning the future. And the Torah is saying, no, that was a divine intervention, one of the three baras that we spoke about earlier. And you won't find any logic for it. It's just the way God did it. Of course, science doesn't even argue about free will as a modern human behavior. They're not even sure we have free will. That's a whole other topic. But on the things that are observable, like painting and math and so on. So I'll open it up. We got 10 minutes for questions or... Have I confused everybody?
Is the members that you can
please use the microphone?
Can you move the microphone? Yeah, please ask me a question, okay? I know which metric you're talking about, but please ask me a question.
It's not a question, I'm just making an observation that there's a devolution the other way. That some human beings were punished to become monkeys.
Yes, I've seen that medrash. There's also a medrash that Adam was initially created with a tail, and then it was cut off for his dignity.
Make a woman.
Okay. If you want to see all those things, I recommend the book. I try to get it down to the main big points. Yes.
In your earlier talk, you came up with the 1,000 times 7,000. 7,000 was some kind of constant that you found or you created out of your math. And then the 9.6 multiplier that you use in the human evolution is the same thing. It's a computed constant that makes the numbers work?
No.
Are there sources for these numbers elsewhere in our tradition or in science? And can you elaborate on that, please?
Sure. Yeah, there's sources for both numbers. As I said before, the sources, and if you're if we're done with humans, I can go and explain the 7,000, because we've got a few minutes. But the problem with the 7,000 is that the Arizal pronounced it as not the right way to go. The Kabbalists before him were fine with it, so it's an 800-year-old source. And there's Kabbalists after that are fine with it, but you know, if you go to a, I don't know about a modern Orthodox, but if you go to Lubavitch, they're not happy with that 7,000 because of the Arizal. So that's the only number that's disputed. The 9.6, I can't remember this source, but it's the definition of a moment, and as I showed you, it works for the 40, for all the 40 days. So no, neither number is made up by me, but you hit on the two. There's one number in each book that I don't have a name with a really good CV into. It's not a Rashi or a Rambam. No, it's not. It's not. I did not invent a 7,000 at all. Yes.
So I'm just wondering how you deal with the issue of consciousness, assuming consciousness means the ability to feel. So we have animals that we know feel, dogs, cows, cats. How do you reconcile what humans have in terms of consciousness and what non-humans have in terms of consciousness?
Yeah, I'm not an expert in that field. All I can tell you is that that's not one of the things that's spelled out in the Torah or in the science side. You know, the ability to feel, it's not a modern human behavior. I know we might have a different ability to feel, but it presumably would come from our language and our ability to envision the future and mix that up with the feelings. But it's not one of the things that comes up in the list on either side, interestingly enough.
So it is consciousness doesn't come up?
It does in the sense that we have a piece of the soul and we believe that all the souls can, if they weren't in the bodies, could communicate. And, you know, there's Kabbalistic work that says that at night, when our soul separates a little bit from our body, there's an ability to communicate. And, of course, the guys that are really plugged in have, of course, prophecy from that. So there is the concept that all of humanity has one soul, Adam's soul. Yeah, and we're putting it back together. So in that sense, that concept is in our literature.
Thanks.
Two things. We're talking, I think, here about empathy, which animals have. 9.6 is the number of seconds a perfect hug takes.
Oh, really?
In behavioral psychology.
Oh, wow. Do you have a reference for that?
I will get it for you.
Thank you. Yeah. I need that for my book. I've been looking for that.
Sure.
I got the 9.6 from the Torah. I kept looking for it in science. And last week there was something close, but not exactly that. Yeah. That's fabulous.
I asked a question in the previous lecture, and I'm still wrestling with the timeline in terms of, you're saying 60,000 years is the time that the soul was put into the body.
Yeah.
And so how do you explain the other sources that we are traditional sources of, you know, 5777, which you started out with?
Yeah, so, you know, what I tried to explain is that there was a period of time of 6 days, and then the 577 starts, and the time in those 6 days is different. And that's where all these numbers
come. I understand that.
Yeah.
The time from, you explained that very clearly, but I'm still wrestling with the concept that the world as it exists and the time frame is only 5777, when you're saying it's 60,000.
Okay, then you have to take the other approach, which is the 6 days were literal, and the Torah gives us a formula to figure out how old the earth was made. So when I look at those bones and I measure them in science, they were made old. They're like those genes that my daughter brought home.
But that's not acceptable. That's okay. Not acceptable for any
so let's
rational.
Go to some. Well, I'll talk to you after. Let's okay. Let somebody else have a chance. Okay. So we don't get stuck on that.
So I am wondering about that slide where you had all the, you called it a messy genealogy or messy ancestors picture.
Yeah.
There are all these different types of, I'm not sure if they're Neanderthals or whatever. And I just wonder, like, what were they and why were they created?
Sure. I'm wondering the same thing. You know, that's not the only problem we have. We have dinosaurs. We, in fact, have, I think, 98% of everything that's ever existed is today extinct. So we're only seeing about 2% of everything that was ever created, that little frog I showed before and so on. So there's a whole problem with all these extinctions, massive extinctions of life on Earth. I know that dinosaurs are famous, but a lot of other things have gone out. I think those things were animals. They just happened to look more like us than a monkey. They were just animals. They were roaming around. In fact, many of those guys in the... It's only about 2 billion years ago we got off trees. So, you know, one of the changes, it doesn't show up in that slide, but we just got these opposing thumbs at some point, and that changed everything. We can hold tools and do things. So these things were just other animals. I mean, there's lots of different looking monkeys. These were, they're called hominins. But there's no evidence in science that they behave like we do. Rabbi, we can stop anytime. We're just in questions.
It's okay.
Okay.
Another 5 minutes.
Okay. So, you know, my answer is that they were animals. Sorry, go ahead.
So I don't know if this is outside the scope of your talk or not, but in terms of the lengths of the how long people lived at the end of Bereshit and at the end of
yes,
Noah.
Yes, I love that.
How do you understand that?
Sure, that's the next talk, but I'll give you that part now.
Next year.
So I told you that Adam contained everybody's soul, and when God first broke him up, this is straight out of the Kabbalah. He gave souls to his descendants that are spoken about in Bereshit that we've been reading about. He gave them big souls. And the concept is the bigger your soul, the more your homework. So you don't want a big soul. So Adam had a big soul, and he was supposed to live forever. His direct descendants, Seth and all the guys we read about, they got a pretty big soul. And the Kabbalah calculates it. And because you have to rectify a bigger soul, you're given more time. So Adam was given infinity. These guys were given 840 years on average. We're given 80 years on average. So the first set of guys that we just read about were given 840 years. They got basically 10 times the size of our soul. So they had to do 10 times the work. They had to rectify 10 things. And it's right in the Kabbalah. And of course, if they were super good, they got released early. And sometimes they lasted 900, just like we can live 70 or 100 or 50. And then at the time of the flood, the experiment was definitely not working. We had big souls and everything was getting screwed up. So he broke them up into smaller souls, and we're told that he reduced the lifespan at that time. So in the Torah, lifespan depends on the homework you're given, how much you have to rectify in the soul. You're given more time to rectify more things. Those guys were given 840 years. Like, it's worked out exactly to the day on it. So that's where the big souls and the long lifespans come from. And presumably they're real. You know, we've only uncovered, I think, 100 plus skeletons out of the 100 billion people that have lived on Earth so far. So we probably didn't find Noah or Adam or one of these guys. We just found a regular guy that lived 80 years. Okay, last one.
One thing you haven't explained is Shabbos.
Okay.
One thing you haven't explained is Shabbos. And what the whole concept, if those 6 days were 2 point whatever number of billion years, what's happening now?
Yeah, so this is the reason why 40% of the people believe that the 6 days were 6 days. So you have to go to that interpretation. But, you know, we're blessed in this generation that we have Einstein. And, you know, it says in the days of Mashiach, for example, that he'll be able to communicate with everybody. Well, we know he can now. He can go on CNN. But you could never figure that out a couple hundred years ago. How is he going to communicate with everybody? So Einstein has taught us that if my twin, which I don't have, goes on a spaceship, he can spend a couple seconds up there and 40 years go by here. So in God's time, it was 6 days. It's just that the time we measure in science is not God's time. It's something else. So either way you can... It's a day for him, just like my twin. If he's resting for 2 seconds, he's resting for 2 seconds. I think he rested for 40 years. I said, no, I just took 2 seconds off. It's a hard concept to understand, but it is in science and it's in Torah. Yes, one more.
It was just, it's unrelated, but once we're on the subject, do you have any ideas of who the Nephilim, or what the Nephilim were, and what their function was? Like that in Bereshit.
No, I don't. I haven't studied that, sorry. Sorry, can you go?
I seem to remember on your timeline, each day was 12 and 12, Friday was 10.
Okay, I was hoping you wouldn't pick that up. Just kidding. So, I mentioned that we're trying to convert the days to the 2.5. The question is, when did the time switch from God time to human time? Did it switch exactly at the end of day 6, or did it switch at another time? And the rabbi asked me this at lunch yesterday, so I looked it up. It's Genesis 3:23. We're told that when Adam sinned, the Torah says he became like God on earth. In other words, he took control of things on earth. Until Adam sinned, God was completely in control. First of all, he was the only one for a while. Then when Adam was in, it was like our kids living in our house. Adam lived according to God's clock. We tell our kids to go to bed at 8, they go to bed at 8. At some point, Adam says, sayonara, I'm out of here. I don't want to listen to your commandment. And then he moves to his clock, just like your kid moving out of home. He doesn't get up, go to bed at 8 anymore. So the sources tell us that exactly the time of Adam's sin, and that's the hour 10. That's where it comes from. The other one you may or may not have picked up, I didn't start counting at the beginning either. I started counting 12 hours later. You maybe didn't see that. And as I said, we have sources to say God works during the day. So the first part of day 1, he starts at 6 a.m. He doesn't start at 6 p.m. So I lost 12 hours there. That's what goes into the 13.74. But you have to go through all of these. Okay, I'll let the next speaker speak. I hate when people overrun my time. Thank you.